I'm Sundas.
I'm Yula.
And I'm Hannah.
Welcome back to another episode of discussing what is happening in the world right now.
Speaking about what's happening, do you guys know about the electronic waste dumping in developing countries?
No, what's going on?
Western countries have been exporting waste to developing countries for recycling. E-waste contains harsh substances such as mercury and lead. Therefore, it causes severe health issues, especially for children, and of course, environmental damage.
No way! What? That also reminds me of oil extraction in the Niger Delta. Did you guys know that Shell, the well-known oil and gas company, of course, has been extracting oil from Niger, which causes spills and environmental damages? This has led to displacements, health issues, and conflicts.
You know what? It is very interesting that most issues in developing countries are caused by the West, exploiting their resources and people for our benefit. However, these problems are barely even covered by the Western media.
Well, well, well. I guess that brings us to today's topic, which is cobalt mining in Congo.
Okay, first, let me give you an overview of the history of cobalt mining. Let's go back to the 19th century. It's a colonial era when Congo was under the control of Belgium. Deep in the southern region, an area called Katanga became the focus of global attention. Why is that? Because it was a home to some of the richest mineral deposits on Earth. This company, backed by Belgian interest, massively expanded mining operations. But let's not forget the coast. Congolese workers endured harsh conditions, pitiful wages, and forced labor.
But what happened when Congo gained independence?
When Congo gained independence, there was a lot of hope. But unfortunately, things didn't go as planned. The government took over mining to benefit the country, but corruption and bad leadership ruined it. The mining collapsed, and the opportunity to build a strong industry was lost. Then came the First and the Second Congo Wars in the early 2000s. Mining areas turned into war zones with foreign powers, military groups, and private companies exploiting the resources, adding to the chaos.
Wow, adding on to that, it's important to note the role Congo plays in cobalt production, no? Congo holds half of the world's cobalt reserves and is by far the world's largest producer of cobalt, with 170,000 metric tons of production just in 2023 alone, accounting for roughly 73% of global production. Guys, to put that into perspective, the second largest producer of cobalt is Indonesia. Can you imagine with how much? With just around 5% of global supply.
Oh, that is actually extremely interesting. But now I think we should explain to our listeners why cobalt is important in the 21st century.
First off, cobalt is absolutely crucial for energy storage, particularly in lithium-ion batteries. These are the batteries that power everything from smartphones to electric cars. Just think about the energy transition. Lithium-ion batteries play a huge role in storing renewable energy from sources like solar and wind.
Also, cobalt is key for electric vehicles. It improves the energy density and lifespan of batteries. Basically, it's why electric vehicles can go further on a single charge and why their batteries last longer overall.
That is right. However, it's not just about cars, though. Mm-hmm. Cobalt is used in everything, from laptops to smart grids. In short, it's central to the tech and energy sectors driving the future.
I'd like to share with you why this particularly matters for the Western countries. The push to be climate neutral by 2015 means a massive increase in cobalt demand. Whether it's for electric cars, renewable energy systems, or advanced electronics, cobalt is the backbone of this transformation. But cobalt isn't just a technical ingredient, it's also a strategic one. It determines how far your electric car can drive, how quickly your battery can charge, and even how long your phone lasts between the charges.
So, when we talk about cobalt mining, we're not just talking about digging up a mineral. We're talking about powering innovation, fighting climate change, and reshaping how we live and move.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, I think we should pause for a second. And we should talk about who the stakeholders are in this case. There are so many actors with different narratives and framings, pushing their own agenda on the issue. So, Hannah, Yulia, what do you guys think? Who are the main ones?
I would definitely start with the mining companies. In 2019, investigations revealed that Glencore's supply chain is linked to child labor, since two children died on the site of mines and a 16-year-old has lost his leg. Can you imagine that? Reports have also suggested that Glencore made deals with artisanal miners who employ child labor and agreements with the Congo military to secure mining sites where injuries did occur. Later, in 2023, they issued a 40-page long statement about their plans to prevent modern slavery along the cobalt supply chain. The consequences of their reforms are yet to be seen. Another mining giant, CMOC, has issued a statement saying that they are devoted to improving working conditions for all employees. However, I find this statement completely foolish, since Congolese workers working on mines owned by CMOC claim that they are insulted, in some cases beaten, and are paid around $2.60 a day, which is less than a Chinese workers get who do the same job.
Oh, Hannah, that is completely true. And for our listeners, background information here, Congo is one of the poorest countries in the world. But even considering that, mining, and mainly cobalt of course, contributes nearly half of the country's national revenue. Can you imagine that? For a country where over 60% of the population lives on less than $2.50 a day, cobalt mining is in every literal sense an economic lifeline. These people rely on mining for survival, which is one of the many reasons they refuse to speak on the issues.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the biggest part of the issue.
On a positive note, though, the government did identify the mining sector as high risking for forced child labor and has taken action to work with the sector to eliminate it. Just in August 2020, a zero tolerance policy for forced child labor in the mining sector was issued as part of a decree focusing on the mining communities. Ever since, there has been continuous inspections to visit and screen mines for labor violations. Despite that, though, the ability to effectively monitor mining sites is impacted by limited capacity and resources, as you can imagine. Also, to add to this, governments are most of the time previously informed from outside sources about a surprising inspection, which contradicts the whole point of a surprise inspection.
Wow, that's just silly. But you know what I've been thinking? We should talk about the local government's narrative in this whole case, shouldn't we?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The Congo government frames cobalt mining as a cornerstone of economic growth, job reaction, and infrastructure development. They're clearly aiming to target and build public support by emphasizing potential benefits, quote-unquote potential, of mining revenues for national progress. The government has promised to combat corruption and renegotiate mining contracts in effort to protect national resources in favor of the Congo citizens. This clearly has not been the case, as these conditions have been worsening, but we can see the government is clearly using media and public statements to appeal to the citizens. The government also communicates its position as a critical supplier of cobalt in a world increasingly dependent on clean energy technologies. Congo government uses geopolitical narratives to position itself as essential in the global energy transition. How convenient.
Talking about global energy transition, we also have to consider those who gain direct profits from the production costs being low, technology companies. Every single one of our listeners benefits from cobalt extracted in Congo, because guess who the main buyers of said cobalt are?
Wait. Before you continue, let me guess. Apple, Tesla, probably even Google, no?
Yeah, exactly. Apple, Alphabet Inc., for those who don't know, it's the parent company of Google, Dell, Microsoft, and Tesla are the main buyers of cobalt. Moreover, in March this year, there was a court case where these companies were accused of quote-unquote knowingly benefiting from and aiding and abetting the cruel and brutal use of young children in the Democratic Republic of Congo to mine cobalt. However, these companies were absolved. The US Court of Appeals held that tech companies could not be held liable, with the court decision stating they did not have anything more than an ordinary buyer-seller transaction with the suppliers in DRC. This is truly heartbreaking, because if the companies were held liable for supporting abuse at Congolese mines, they could have influenced the suppliers to become more ethical, to keep buying cobalt from them, since it is so crucial to their businesses.
Adding to that, when discussing cobalt mining in Congo, the focus is often on big companies and on global supply chains, overlooking the crucial role of local communities. Over 2 million people rely on artisanal mining, small-scale informal work using basic tools, despite these really dangerous conditions and frequent accidents. However, for many, it's their only way to make a living.
Oh, and you know what? It also affects the environment. Without proper mining practices, the land gets destroyed. It can lead to deforestation, soil erosion, and water contamination. This harms local agriculture and affects the health of surrounding areas.
But it's also extremely heartbreaking to see that these people are scared to speak up for themselves, since they will either lose their jobs or they'll get executed by the government. When journalists would like to speak for them and represent them in the media, they refuse the opportunity.
Guys, exactly. They are clearly struggling and cannot help themselves. So what should happen in this case, you may ask? International organizations should be intervening. For example, the UN. You might ask the UN's role in this. Well, the UN has reported many times on the exploitation of child labor and severe human rights abuse in Congo. They have stressed the necessity to protect vulnerable populations, but also nothing's been happening and nothing's been done. Which sounds like a familiar approach the UN takes a lot of the time. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. But what about other international organizations?
Good thing you asked. OECD, for example, has written a lot of reports addressing the issue, like the 2019 Interconnected Supply Chains, or Amnesty International, which also issued reports on the human rights aspect back in their 2016. 2016, guys. That's almost 10 years ago. The report was, "This is what we die for." The same goes for the World Economic Forum or the Business and Human Rights Resource Center. So it's clear that this isn't an issue of yesterday. Yet again, no action. Why is that, you might ask? Again, external interventions are limited considering Congo is a sovereign nation. International organizations could only recommend changes they cannot enforce without the cooperation of the Congo government. Also, the fact that cobalt is deeply integrated into global markets, as we mentioned, so taking decisive decisions could disrupt the industry's critical for green energy transition, which could create even more issues.
Let's talk about the role of China and the US, since they are the two most important countries who gain profits from mining. They're worth mentioning. So, China dominates the Congo's mining industry, controlling almost 80% of cobalt production and owning half of its top mines. Back in 2008, China made a $6 billion deal with Congo, trading resources for mining rights and infrastructure investment. While this gave China access to key mining sites, much of the promised infrastructure hasn't been constructed yet. When it comes to how China frames the issue, they focus on the economic growth and avoid talking about the human rights issues tied to the mining. Instead, they blame the Congolese government for any problems like dodging accountability.
Okay, China's influence is definitely significant, but what about the democratic Western countries? How do they present this problem?
The US is framing the political discourse around cobalt mining by emphasizing clean energy, ethical sourcing, and reducing dependency on foreign resources. With policies supporting electric vehicles and renewable energy, cobalt has become a key focus. The US highlights human rights concerns, particularly child labor in Congo, as a reason to push for stricter supply chain accountability and bans on unethical cobalt. At the same time, during the Biden administration, there has been an effort to invest in domestic mining to reduce the reliance on Congo, though the process has been very slow and ineffective. The US narrative combines ethical concerns with strategic push for resource independence, even though most of the world's cobalt is in Congo, and the American companies like Tesla and Apple depend heavily on it, as we mentioned before.
Yeah, that's right. As Yulia also mentioned, Tesla was sued for failing to address child labor in its cobalt supply chain. Elon Musk's ties to Trump and his America First rhetoric complicate this further, as critiques argue that his focus on domestic interests might overshadow the ethical implications of sourcing cobalt from Congo.
In the end, the US faces a critical choice: continue relying on global supply chain with all the complexities, or push for the domestic mining solutions that would align with Biden's vision of a more self-sustaining, ethical, clean energy industry.
Yeah, but also we cannot forget that we, as the consumers of products containing cobalt, became stakeholders in this case too. the governments and the companies that endorse the exploitative practices in Congolese mines, and big news outlets that do not highlight the issue enough made us compliant with the situation. I was trying to find information on the exploitation in Congo in the most popular newspapers, however, I stumbled upon a very unsettling pattern. BBC has not posted any articles even remotely mentioning the cobalt mining problem. The New York Times posted how cobalt mines in Congo have potential to attract hundreds of international investors back in 2021 in one article in May about how one corrupt investor's influence in Congo mines is turning away Western investment. And lastly, Reuters only talk about cobalt in relation to the US and their critical minerals push.
Oh my god, this is very devastating.
It really is, since media framing is crucial during crisis. When such big news outlets cover the story about cobalt mining only in the light of business, it creates a misunderstanding of the problem in the society. People do not see the process of how cobalt is extracted and the horrors that come with it. The saddest part is that the world is made in a way that we cannot escape or effectively boycott products with cobalt. It is in our phones, laptops, cars, solar panel. Therefore, we as citizens can only raise awareness about Congolese people, so human rights associations will take the problem more seriously and international organizations will start taking action rather than just expressing concern.
Yulia, you are very right that we have to raise awareness. It is also very important to acknowledge that silence of the higher-ups makes us compliant. This is exactly why we have to bring this topic into political discourse. Also, one of the other reasons being the paradox of the green energy, like, hello? Green energy is dependent on cobalt, and as we progress in enforcing more sustainable and eco-friendly technologies, we will need more and more cobalt, obviously. However, unregulated cobalt mining contributes to deforestation, soil degradation, and water pollution. These contradict the environmental goals of the green energy movement. Don't you guys see that? Also, the conditions of the cobalt mining are just inhumane, as we mentioned earlier. Child labor, unlivable wages, exploitation, and unsafe working conditions. Considering the European Green Initiative to become climate neutral by 2050, cobalt consumption will be increasing even more rapidly every year. Can you imagine? Which is likely to lead to more exploitation of African land and people. The way cobalt is extracted nowadays is just immoral. Ignoring the problem means you're complying with it. The UN must issue regulations and sanctions on unethical corporations that exploit their workers, clearly.
The idea about preserving the environment in Europe is quite common in public and political discourse. However, by increasing eco-friendly practices, we use more and more cobalt on a daily basis. With the increase of demand on cobalt, the situation in Congo only becomes worse. Very interesting fact is that the production of cobalt has almost doubled since 2018, when the demand on electric vehicles and green energy started significantly rising. So basically, we are preserving our environment at the expense of Congolese people and their land.
Oh, Hannah, that made me think of another problem. How come we don't really hear, or dare I say, care about situations in Africa compared to issues like the war in the Middle East or the war in Ukraine?
Well, let me answer that. Well, there are a lot of reasons why we do not care as much about issues that seem distant from us, such as exploitation happening in cobalt mines, even though we are the ones consuming the benefits of the quote-unquote modern slavery. In the world filled with information, we become unsympathetic to regular news. This is where visuals come into play. For example, do you remember the global reaction to the photo of Alan Cordy, a 2-year-old Syrian boy who drowned in the Mediterranean Sea in 2015 when his family tried to reach Europe from Syria?
Oh, yes, I do. The photo caused a surge in donations to charities helping migrants and refugees. You know, one of the charities received a record 15-fold increase in donations within just 24 hours of the picture's publication?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. But what is interesting is that by that time, the war was going on for 4 years, had killed 250,000 people, and created millions of refugees. But people only mobilized after seeing the picture of Alan. Or, do you remember the video of George Floyd that went viral in 2020 and caused hundreds of thousands of people to go on the streets to protest police brutality? It is not as if it was the first time ever hearing the news about citizens getting killed by the law enforcement, but it is the strong visual that helped organize a movement. Same thing goes for every piece of information consumed. If I say that out of 250,000 people working in Congolese mines, approximately 40,000 are children as young as 6 years old, it will not have the same effect as showing a picture of an exhausted child working without rest on the cobalt mine. That's a fact that people cannot grasp statistics as well as they grasp visual representation. Wars in the Middle East and in Ukraine are very well visually documented, unlike the exploitation in Congo, and it is not for no reason. People there are scared to speak up for themselves, as Hannah already mentioned, fearing persecution by the government. And it is also extremely hard for the journalists to get to Africa. It is giant, therefore it is very expensive to travel around, even between the countries on the continent. You have to take multiple forms of transportation to get from point A to point B. The region is also really dangerous. Journalists who end up going there tell terrifying stories about what had happened to them.
You brought up an important point. I'm sure that we have overwhelmed our listeners with the amount of data and facts we have covered in this podcast. And just imagine that this would have been presented as a movie or as a photo exhibition. How would it differ? How would you feel? Would you feel more emotional, attached more to the topic? Would you be able to feel the struggles of these people? Based on the podcast, I assume that you didn't really experience heightened emotions. However, after a movie or pictures, you would probably have. That's why I think visuals in the media could be the key for achieving attention regarding the crisis of cobalt mining.
Oh wow, you do bring a really important point, and I totally agree. There are also other reasons why we don't care as much about Africa. From an evolutionary perspective, we focus on things that threaten to kill us immediately. We lose our empathy with distance. I'm not even talking about geographical proximity, but rather cultural. The less we understand the people of the countries, the less we care about them, clearly. People are very simple beings. We care most about issues that directly affect us or our loved ones. Distant problems, even if severe, often lose out to more immediate concerns like local political crises or even celebrity drama. Because events in distant places seem very abstract, we cannot grasp the severity of the problem we are not affected by.
Sandis, you know, what you just said leads our discussion to a huge issue in today's news. The distance between us and African countries is huge, and it really influences media representation. Have you guys heard about the Global Media Index on Africa?
No.
No.
Okay, so this year, the nonprofit journalism group Africa No Filter released its first ever Global Media Index on Africa. It's 2024, and it's a first ever Global Media Index on Africa. It is the only index that tracks how the world's most influential news providers cover the continent. By analyzing the diversity of topics, sources used, diversity of countries, and depth of coverage. Africa No Filter studied more than 1,000 articles over a 6-month period in 20 different international newspapers, and the results are just devastating. Not even one news outlet consistently covered all 54 countries that are in Africa. In fact, for example, American newspapers such as The Washington Post, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal actively ignore Africa and fail to informatively write about problems there, focusing mainly on business relations and natural disasters there. The average score of the media index is 52 out of 100, putting the collective score between all news outlets around the world just above average. This really shows that Africa is severely underrepresented in the media. Their problems and triumphs must be known by the public of the West. We are interconnected with issues in Africa because we are the consumers of the products manufactured based on African fossil fuels. But it seems like this cultural distance that you were just talking about between Western and African countries really makes us, and apparently the journalists too, not empathetic. Because there is no other good reason of why we are not informed about important news affecting us too, such as exploitation in Congo, for example.
What you just described perfectly illustrates what we refer to when discussing Western media's oversights on cobalt mining.
Exactly.
Well, just to sum up our conversation today, it's important to realize that media outlets have so much power over the information we know. It's unacceptable that the most popular newspapers do not focus on all global issues, considering they have the resources and the opportunity to really make a difference in today's society. It's not for no reason, obviously, that the media is called quote-unquote the fourth branch of the government. Because of their ignorances right now, we're all accomplices in the case of modern slavery in Congo, since we keep using cobalt based on devices on a daily basis.
That's true. But guys, unfortunately, our time has come to an end. We still have many more subjects to cover in this political communication series, and stay tuned for the next week's topic.
Already come to an end? Wow, I learned so much today. I wouldn't even have known any of this.
Me too. Thank you guys for this conversation.
Thank you.
Bye guys!